is Amerisure Mutual versus Microplastics. Scano?
Good morning, Your Honors.
May it please the Court. My name is Chris Cano, and I represent Microplastics in this appeal. This appeal arises from the District Court's ruling on cross motions for summary judgment that were submitted by the parties in this case. Basically, the District Court denied Microplastics' cross motion for partial summary judgment and granted Amerisure's cross motion for partial summary judgment on the issue of the duty to defend. Subsequently, the District Court entered a final judgment from which this appeal is now taken. It's Microplastics' position in this appeal that the allegations in the underlying complaint, the counterclaim that was filed against it by Vallejo, give rise to a duty to defend, and that Amerisure breached that duty to defend by abandoning its insured, thereby forcing Microplastics to defend itself from the allegations in that counterclaim, and as a result incurred substantial defense costs and ultimately resulted in the negotiation of a settlement that led to a substantial amount of consideration paid on behalf of Microplastics to settle the claim.
In the course of that litigation, did any evidence of actual claims of property damage or bodily injury turn up?
Really never got to that juncture, Your Honor, and it certainly was never evident before the denial by Amerisure, and there's been no evidence taken in this case to suggest that. Again, it's Microplastics' position that there was a duty to defend based on the allegations.
I understand your position. I'm just asking you the question.
Right.
If there is any such evidence.
There wasn't any evidence developed, and certainly not before the denial. And turning back to our position, it's the allegations of the complaint that's the standard in Illinois. An insurer gets a notice of a claim and has to look at the allegations, and if there's the potential for coverage, then they have an obligation to defend. And here, that standard is met. And in looking at the standard, courts in Illinois construe the allegations and the policy liberally in favor of the insured. And as such, the deck is very much stacked against an insurer on the duty to defend issue. Here, looking to the specific language of the Amerisure policies, the trigger of coverage was property damage or bodily injury caused by an occurrence, as those terms are defined in the policy. Here we've got an instance where Microplastics manufactured some component parts, sold those to Vallejo. Vallejo incorporated them into door latch assemblies and then sold them to OEMs down the line, which were then incorporated into automobiles. So the position that Amerisure takes is that there is no third-party property damage or bodily injury potentially alleged in these allegations. And really the significant allegations here in the Vallejo counterclaim are these third-party costs associated with the defects that were charged to Vallejo. Those are the allegations of the complaint, and that's the basis for our position today. And
what, Mr. Cano, what's the occurrence here?
The occurrence and the property damage and occurrence analysis are very similar in Illinois. If you're talking about a breach of contract case where only the repair or replacement costs of the defective part are being sought, the case law is clear. There's no occurrence of third-party harm. But if you've got a defective component part, you've got defective work that's incorporated into something else, and that gives rise to unexpected third-party harm, that's the occurrence. The analysis
It would be the accident when the brake parts fail, or something
right,
like
something
that, right?
of that nature.
So what do we have here?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got we've got to look to the allegations of the complaint. We've got a component part.
Costs charged back.
Unspecified costs charged back associated with the defects. We've got component parts manufactured by my client Microplastics incorporated into Vallejo's door latch assemblies, which were subsequently sold to the OEMs down the line and incorporated into their automobiles. So on the basis of those allegations, Amerisure wrongfully decided that there is no potential for third-party harm here. But those allegations are so broad and so unspecific that under the Illinois standard for determining the duty to defend, a duty was triggered. Merisher certainly had the opportunity to defend under reservation.
You're saying that if third-party damage is not inconsistent with the complaint, it's covered. Is that right?
I would suggest to the court that that is the standard. I mean, the liberal interpretation that is supposed to be given to the allegations.
The Illinois cases don't seem to support that.
Well, I think the cases that are have been cited, there are some that fall on the other side of the curve where they say there was no third-party harm here alleged. You're only talking about repair or replacement costs. But they also acknowledge that if you're talking about something else, third-party harm, then there would be property damage that triggers the duty to defend. And again, it's not a specific allegation in the counterclaim that says that, but it certainly does not foreclose, and under the standards that must be applied to the duty to defend, Amerisher wrongfully denied coverage and a duty to defend because on the basis of those allegations, they could not clearly deny that there was potential.
Does it matter that your client told the court in the underlying case that there was no insurance coverage here?
I think you're referring to the 26A disclosure that is made a part of Amerisher's position. I think if you look at the timing of that, you had the counterclaim filed in November, answer filed by Microplastics in December, and I think the 26A disclosure was in February, a month or so before notice was given to Amerisher. But all throughout the course prior to that, the parties were still engaged in ongoing business. They were still manufacturing parts, selling them to Vallejo. They were working through issues related to, from my client's perspective, unpaid invoices. From Vallejo's perspective, specifications and quality issues. And at the point in time when those disclosures were made, they believed that there might not be coverage for this. But it became
said that
clear.
Pretty clearly, right?
Mm-hmm. What's that?
They said that pretty clearly.
Well, they did in the disclosure.
The district court really wants to know if there's insurance available at that stage of the game.
Well, right. But remember, that's a 26A disclosure, and certainly those could have been amended, and it's not evidence at this juncture. And as I said, a month later, notice was provided to Amerisher. And going beyond the property damage and occurrence issue, the occurrence issue wasn't reached by the district court. Amerisher also takes the position that such damages, if alleged, were excluded by the business risk exclusions. But I think that analysis...
Why wouldn't any breach of warranties lawsuit be covered by this policy?
Why wouldn't it?
How is anything excluded?
Well, if you're talking about breach of warranty, if your warranty is applying only to the product here or the component part, and if you're seeking repair or replacement costs, I would agree with that position that such
costs... How about
costs
if you just seek damages? Damages as a consequence of the breach of warranty.
Well, if it was unspecified, then, again, going back to the allegations, it would depend on what was alleged.
It would be covered under your theory.
It would be potentially covered. But as I said, it's at that point when the claim crosses the Amerisher desk that the duty must be determined based on those allegations. And at the point that we're looking at here, it's obvious that Amerisher was unable to make that decision. And under the Illinois insurance regulations, they're obligated to make that determination within a reasonable time. What they did here was they acknowledged the claim but said, we're not sure if there's a duty to defend here. There might be coverage under some of the provisions. We're going to investigate. Meanwhile, Microplastics is left to defend itself from the counterclaim. 4 months later, in June of 2007, Amerisher finally denies coverage and subsequently files this action. And in the interim, it's interesting to note the April 2007 correspondence that Amerisher cites to in its brief does not mention a notice condition, does not suggest that they are going to deny coverage based on notice. That's simply not evident from the allegations of the complaint. And what they did was they used this time to demand thousands of pages of documents from Microplastics to develop its denial position, which was subsequently encompassed in the June letter.
Mr. Cano, I have a question I'd like to address to both you and Ms. Arnold. In essence, I've only been on this court a few months, and this is about the third or fourth case along these lines that I've seen under Illinois law debating a duty to defend. And as I'm learning about that, I'm wondering whether the Illinois courts have explored the possibility, in essence, of a kind of intermediate position where there's some time to explore when you've got such vague allegations about damages in the underlying complaint, some time to explore what's really the nature of the claim here. Have the courts tried that and said we're not happy with that result or that approach or what?
I'm certainly not aware of a case that has sanctioned this type of process. Certainly the standard is either you reserve rights to contest coverage and file your DJ later, or you deny and file your DJ. There's really no case that says you can call a timeout and investigate all the while not taking a coverage position and forcing the insured to defend itself and incur substantial costs. I think if there's no further questions from the bench at this point, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kohler. Ms. Arnold?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Catherine Arnold for the appellee, Merisher Mutual Insurance Company. Your Honors, the District Court's judgment should be affirmed in this case. Merisher had no duty to defend or indemnify Microplastics for the Vallejo counterclaim for the simple reason that the counterclaim did not seek damages because of property damages. That term is defined in the Merisher policies. And Mr. Kano has provided no arguments this morning in either in it orally or in his brief, which should compel this Court to reverse the District Court's decision on that issue.
So you can't tell. And if you can't tell, doesn't the insured win?
No, that's not true, Your Honor. And I think what we need to do is look at the core of the complaint here. You need to look to the allegations actually alleged and the damages sought. If you look at the actual allegations, it's clear that the Vallejo counterclaim does not seek damages for any third-party harm. Under the Merisher policy, in order to trigger a duty to defend...
We know that a third party claimed to have been damaged, right?
But they claimed
charges
to have been damaged
were,
because...
Costs were charged back by the customer to Vallejo, right?
True for defective component parts.
Oh.
And what happened was, is, you know, Microplastics provided a component part which was incorporated into these door latch assemblies. Those were then sold to Vallejo's customers. The parts provided by Microplastics were defective, did not work. And so these customers charged back approximately $325,000, which was the cost they incurred buying these defective component parts. That's economic loss damages. If you look at the complaint itself, all Vallejo sought as far as damages goes from Microplastics was $1,100,000.
Sorry, is that $325,000 figure, is that in the counterclaim that Vallejo...
Actually, in the counterclaim. Vallejo specifies the damages it seeks and also itemizes what it seeks those damages for. It seeks $1,132,000 in damages from Microplastics for breach of contract, and it specifies that $325,000 of those damages is for defective component parts sold by Microplastics to Vallejo, and it states this is the amount charged to Vallejo by customers for the defective component parts supplied. And this is under the breach of contract count. It says that $645,000 of those damages are for unjustified price increases that Microplastics charge Vallejo for those component parts, and that $162,000 is for price decreases that were not honored by Microplastics but promised to Vallejo. So if you look at the damages itself sought in this breach of contract count, it's eminently clear that no damages were ever, ever sought for any alleged third-party harm.
I thought you added a couple of words to those allegations, though. The complaint, the specification of damages just says $325,000 for defects in component parts sold by Microplastics to Vallejo. This is the amount charged to Vallejo by Vallejo's customers.
Right.
With no further explanation. So the problem is, what do we do without further explanation?
Well, it's...
Particularly given all the Illinois law that says the insured gets the benefit of the doubt on this sort of thing.
Well, the Illinois Appellate Court in Diamond States says you have to look to the core of the complaint when determining a duty to defend. What is this complaint really about? What are the damages that are really sought? And the core of the complaint in this case indicates that Vallejo was seeking breach of contract damages from Microplastics for its failure to live up to the benefit of the bargain, its failure to provide Microplastics with component parts that were not defective. And that
much can be true, let's say, if we were talking about other cases, let's say more critical parts to the performance of vehicles where defective parts wind up causing accidents.
Right, right. And there's no evidence here that these defective component parts provide any sort of third-party harm that Vallejo's customers are seeking damages for.
It's not excluded either, right? So could you address that problem under Illinois law? What do you do in the face of that uncertainty with vague allegations about the damages?
Well, you have to look at the core of the complaint. And the two phrases that Microplastics hinges its claim to coverage on fall under a portion of the counterclaim, which is titled Breach of Purchase Orders, Defective Component Parts. You know, and you have to look at those allegations in context to see what the parties are really seeking here. It's clear here that they're just seeking breach of contract damages for economic loss incurred by Vallejo and his customers for Microplastics supply of the defective component parts. The only place anywhere in this litigation where any mention was made of third-party property damage is in Mr. Kano's motion for summary judgment below and in his appellant's brief in this case. Mr. Kano says that the phrases that Vallejo's customers with respect to the component parts charge Vallejo for costs associated with the defects and that Microplastics is liable to Vallejo for the cost charged to Vallejo associated with those defects. It uses those phrases to say that this actually means that they're seeking coverage for third-party harm. The problem is there are no allegations in the complaint that indicate that these phrases relate to third-party harm. And actually, its musings are dependent on hypotheticals that were imagined by Mr. Kano that find, you know, no support in the counterclaim itself. Mr. Kano hypothesizes the cost associated with the defects really means that Vallejo is seeking damages to the personal property of others when these door latch assemblies fail. But you only find these hypothetical musings in his brief and in his briefs below and in this case.
Ms. Arnold, is what's going on here in essence just an idea that if there had been any such damages, surely they would have been alleged by Vallejo?
Well, I would think so, and they would have come out in the extrinsic evidence, too. I mean, the investigation also indicates, and as Mr. Kano admitted, there's never been any evidence that Vallejo's customers ever alleged any third-party damage or ever sought.
Does Illinois' eight corners rule here allow you to do that kind of investigation?
Well, no, but the thing is there has to be, you have to look at the four corners of the complaint and the four corners of the insurance policy in making a duty to defend. But the duty to defend cannot be based on hypotheticals imagined by the insurance counsel.
The Illinois cases then recognize the ability of the insurance company to put off the question of a decision about a duty to defend while you carry out this kind of extrinsic investigation?
Twin City Fire addresses that issue directly. That's an Illinois appellate court decision. And in Twin City Fire, what happened was is you had an ongoing litigation. The insurer did not promptly advise its insurers of the ongoing litigation. When the insurer was finally apprised of the ongoing litigation, it took them 4 months to issue a reservation of rights letter, and they raised the defense of late notice. And in that case, the court found that there was no waiver of the late notice defense.
I'm talking, though, about the reliance upon extrinsic evidence that you gathered to make a decision looking beyond the face of the complaint and the face of the policy. Are there Illinois cases that say that's okay?
Well, in that instance, they did, because with a late notice defense, they found that the insurance company needed a time to investigate whether or not they did, in fact, had a late notice defense, and the fact that they waited 4 months to raise it did not waive that defense, particularly where, and as Amerisher did in this case, where they promptly issue a reservation of rights letter reserving all rights to raise coverage defenses later and expressly indicate that they're not waiving any of those coverage defenses. So, basically, hypotheticals cannot trigger a duty to defend under Illinois law.
You're relying on this concept of hypothetical pretty heavily here.
Because there are no allegations of third-party harm.
The other concept is implausible, but You're rejecting that, is that right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I say the Judge Nordberg at one point used the term implausible, and you felt that was an erroneous approach to the problem, that it was implausible, didn't necessarily draw the line. It's hypothetical, it does.
Well, I think you have to look at the allegations of the complaint and the insurance policy, and in this case, if you look at the counterclaim, there are no allegations of third-party harm. Vallejo never sought damages for third-party harm. And all, the only allegations of third-party harm are the hypotheticals conjured up by insurance counsel in their briefs. And you know, the Illinois courts, granted, do have a very broad duty to defend standard, but they do have a duty to defend standard. And the duty to defend has to be determined based on the actual allegations alleged in the counterclaim itself and the damages sought. And if you look at the counterclaim in this case, the allegations alleged, the damages sought, it's clear that Vallejo was never seeking damages for third-party property damage. And therefore, you know, a liability policy was not triggered and Amerisher had no duty to defend.
You're not suggesting, though, that those assessed damages would be inconsistent with their claim, are you?
Well, they never alleged that. They just alleged that there was a problem with the defective component parts, and they just lost the benefit of their bargain and just wanted their money back. I mean, that's what this suit is about. It's not about claims being brought against Vallejo's customers for third-party property damage. That's all in the imagination of the insurance counsel and construing allegations or phrases.
Well, that's not explicit in the complaint, but it's not inconsistent with the complaint.
Well, the district court also correctly recognized that it would place a horrible burden on insurers if they could only disclaim coverage if specific claims are actually excluded in the complaint itself. They said that's too low of a threshold to apply to the duty to defend standard. There must be a standard. It must be based on the allegations as alleged and the damages sought. And the damages sought make abundantly clear that no damages were sought for third-party property damage.
Case makes that point most explicitly from your perspective.
Diamond States. Diamond States is a wonderful
air conditioning
case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
the
sorry?
Air conditioning case. The air conditioning case?
Yeah, the air conditioning case. Right. In that case, there were allegations of what could be, I guess, characterized as bodily injury because they stated that because the air conditioning system did not, you know, perform as warranted, that some of the employees became sick and ill, et cetera. But the reason why the court found no duty to defend in that case is because the state of Illinois only sought economic loss damages and only sought damages for loss of productivity, failure to lease the premises, repair and replacement costs because of the defective HVAC system. It never sought damages for, you know, medical expenses incurred by the employees because they were sick from working in a facility that was too warm. And based on that, the court found that there was no duty to defend. And the district court in this case found the facts for coverage under Diamond States were even stronger than the facts for coverage in this case, which I wholly agree with. I mean, at least in Diamond States, you had allegations indicating sickness. In this case, you have no allegations indicating any third-party harm, you know, sickness, injury, damage to personal property, et cetera. There are absolutely no allegations that support a duty to defend in this case. You also have no property damage caused by an occurrence, although this wasn't an issue addressed by the district court because they didn't need to. They found there was no coverage because there was no damage because of property damage. You also have no damage caused by an occurrence because the Illinois courts have consistently held where the damage alleged is just to the insured's product itself. It's foreseeable damage, and it's not accidental. An occurrence in the Amerisher policies is defined as an accident, so where the damages are just restricted to the defective parts supplied by the insured itself, there's no property damage caused by an occurrence.
But we know that there was something beyond that, right? I mean, we know that Vallejo's customers were unhappy.
They were
right?
unhappy because the component parts provided by microplastics were defective.
Well, we know they were defective. We don't know what the consequences were, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because no one ever alleged there were any consequences. They just wanted their money back. I'd also like to say that, as indicated in the Twin City Fire case, Amerisher did not waive their late notice defense. What happened in this case was Amerisher received notice of the counterclaim on March 1, 2007. It issued its reservation of rights letter 5 weeks later. It raised all the bases for disclaimer that we have now raised in this appeal, except for late notice, but it did specifically reserve its right to waive, to raise other coverage defenses, and specifically noted that it did not waive any of those coverage defenses. And then a month later, it filed, it issued its disclaimer letter and filed this declaratory judgment action, which is exactly what insurers are supposed to do under Illinois law.
At that point, you did raise the notice issue?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. So there was no waiver. And also, as you all pointed out, we think the real reason why Microplastics never advised Amerisher of this claim is because they never thought there was insurance coverage for it, and that is readily apparent by its Rule 26.1 disclosures. Remember, Microplastics was the plaintiff in the underlying case. I mean, they filed suit in September of 2006, and then the Vallejo counterclaim was filed in November, and 3 months later, in February of 2007, they advised the court there was no insurance coverage for this claim.
Thank you, thank you, Ms. Arnold.
Okay, thank you, Your Honors.
Rebuttal, Mr. Cano?
I'd just like to spend a few moments talking about the Diamond State decision, because it was part of the district court's analysis in issuing its orders. As set forth in my brief, we believe that that case is distinguishable for the very reasons that were just discussed. The allegations there were loss of productivity. Those clearly are economic losses. They weren't seeking reimbursement or indemnification for bodily injury claims that were pursued against the state, either by way of workman's comp claims or personal injury claims. They were just saying the air conditioning system malfunctioned, there was a loss of productivity because of issues with the personnel. There was nothing further alleged. Contrary to that case, here you've got allegations of third-party harm. As discussed by the court and counsel, you don't know what those allegations are, and there's certainly no way on the face of that complaint to preclude damages beyond the component parts themselves. There's just simply no basis to make that call, and if it was clear on the basis of the allegations, then Amerisher certainly had the opportunity to deny the coverage initially when it was presented, but it didn't. It waited 4 months before it denied coverage, and then during that period of time, it developed a late notice argument, which clearly is not supported by the allegations of the complaint. And if I could spend a few more moments talking about the notice argument, in Illinois, notice is judged by a reasonableness standard as soon as practicable. Is that reasonable? Considering all the facts and circumstances of this case, was Microplastics notice reasonable under those set of circumstances? Here, we're talking about a period of 15 weeks. Parties were still trying to resolve their issues, and we had these unspecified allegations of third-party harm that were presented. Amerisher, on the other hand, which is obligated to respond, either affirm or deny coverage within a quote-unquote reasonable time, took 4 months to do so. Even under their benchmark for reasonableness, Microplastics notice met that. But turning to the Supreme Court's Lavorsi decision, looking at the factors that a court should consider in determining whether it was reasonable, there's simply no evidence that's been submitted by Amerisher that the notice was unreasonable. There's no prejudice. There's no allegation of prejudice. There was evidence submitted by Microplastics of its relative unsophistication in these types of cases. There's no general counsel. There's no risk manager. There's a course of history of 20 years where they've only been involved with 5 lawsuits. So certainly they were not a sophisticated insured. So there's been no support for a late notice defense. So if I could conclude here, we believe that the district court's ruling should be reversed and that Microplastics' motion for summary judgment on the issue of the duty to defend should be reversed and the motion should be granted. And in addition to the defense costs incurred by Microplastics, Amerisher should also be found liable for the consideration that was given in the settlement. And here we're talking about the credit memo that was issued pursuant to that settlement for $551,000 and change. And simply because Amerisure, when faced with these allegations, had a duty to defend, they breached that duty to defend and abandoned their insured. There's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cano. The case will be taken under advisement.